wisdom beyond wisdom, mana prajna paramita. Good evening. We are on class 4 of the 7 factors of enlightenment. And
I see some people who weren't here before.
Who can name what the 7 factors are for people who might not have been here?
Mindfulness. Energy, delight, investigation, tranquility, equanimity, and concentration.
So far in this class, we've done an overview of those 7 factors. We've talked about mindfulness. We've talked about investigation. And tonight we are covering delight, or joy, also known as pritti, and energy, or virya. So we're grouping those two together. And we're going to dive right in tonight because we're going to have lots of opportunities to talk as we go and bring in any insights that you might have from the reading that we did. So let's go. Energy and joy. These two are fun for me. There are two that I've worked with, noticed, I should say, fairly prominently in my practice over the last couple years. So they were easy for me to kind of call to mind and work with for this class. So I'm hopeful that will, maybe they'll resonate with you in that way too. I think most of us can recognize energy and joy and kind of the way that they can build on each other in our lives. So if you think about, like a creative flow process, maybe an artistic project or a sport, where there's that just, combination of energy and joy and they build on each other. In a meditative context, sort of in a concentrated samadhi state, that also happens, where you can experience increasing energy in your zazen, and then that can lead to joy and rapture even, and then that sense of rapture and bliss can then create more energy. And all of those things can feed back through the other factors, so they're all talking to each other. And we're going to get more into that in the last class, but since we are grouping energy and joy together tonight, I wanted to give you a little taste of how the factors can kind of work together. I think I really kind of noticed these in that more kind of concentrated meditation state in a specific way. I can remember, I don't know how many of you have done a meditation retreat, but it can be tiring. It can be draining. There can be stuff that you get told to do that you don't want to do because you want to go take a nap. And I can kind of remember the first time that that somebody said to me, "You're on kitchen cleanup," and I wasn't I was happy. the first time that happened, it felt really significant because every other time I was like, "Come on, I just want to go take a nap, please," But that shifted. It's not a straight line. There are certainly times that I still want to take a nap and I don't want to do dishes. But more often than not, especially in a situation like that where I'm doing a lot of meditation, there is a just an overwhelming joy and energy. And I want to just keep doing stuff. I mean, stuff being zazen or doing the dishes or really whatever's in front of me. So that can happen, and it can be very powerful. I think that I was going to talk about this at the end, but I have noticed kind of a shift, from when I first started noticing that. I kind of thought that was it. I was like, "This is great! Energy and joy! I have arrived." And I think that what I'm starting to notice is that. Those two things feel different than equanimity. And so there is kind of a difference. We're going to talk about equanimity in the last class, but this is just a little bit of preview again on how all the factors are working together. And with equanimity, we're seeing, gosh, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. It's defined by the Princeton Dictionary of Buddhism as a state of mental balance during the course of developing concentration that is free from lethargy and from excitement. So there is a way in which equanimity, although fed by all the other factors, feels different. So I have come to kind of notice that with time. So I just wanted to point that out. And at the last class, we're going to have an opportunity to do some workshopping for ourselves about how we think all of these factors might actually work together. I think the last thing I'll say, just kind of by way of introduction, and then we're going to get into some discussion, is that recently, another way that I'm really feeling energy and joy is in relation to like wholesome action, right action. And we're going to talk about that a little bit when we get into kind of the definition and how we experience energy. But one thing that you'll see again and again when you're reading about the seven factors and you're reading about energy is that it does have this connection to like virtue, the word virtue gets used a lot. And so, again, I think most of us can think to a time where maybe we've been doing some volunteering, or maybe it's the effort of doing work and putting food on the table for yourself and for your family. Maybe it's you know, your activities that you do here. For myself recently, I'm just noticing how that energy, and again, that joy, really can culminate through like a day of work practice. Today was Wednesday. I think I had like an hour of sleep last night, but we were outside raking leaves, and it was delightful. And that energy built, and that joy built. And I connect that, in this case, to, you know, working on the land, contributing to this place. So those are some examples. And what do you guys think? Let's talk about energy first. Why don't we just take a minute and bring to mind energy, virya. How do you recognize it? What is virya to you? Let's just popcorn around for a few minutes.
I have an association with Pluto and like warmth and like sometimes energy to stay rather than to move.
That's neat. Yeah. Thank you.
In the reading, it kind of surprised me because I thought of energy as something that happens after a couple of cups of coffee on rare occasions. But this is talking about sort of purpose and drive and wanting to to become more enlightened or whatever, or you know, live appropriately, whatever, but more of a sort of a intention. So that sort of surprised me. Like, you know, I can summon a fair amount of sort of intention and willpower, whatever, towards something. But I always thought of it, that was more about something that you just happen to feel every once in a while.
Right. So this idea that it's something that can be cultivated.
Purpose, you know, to do things with purpose and intention is something you can do rather than wait for it to happen.
Yeah. Neat. Thank you.
I like willingness as a description of energy because it gets at the, you know, part of what it offers is ability to kind of lean into, like, the edge of practice, lean into, you know, that which is not immediately, like what we are conditioned to want, you know? Something that might seem hard or you know, washing the dishes instead of taking a nap. And so, willingness kind of gets at that without kind of being confused by just like level of expectation.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's one of the more cultural associations with energy is that like if we have a high level of energy, then we're amped up.
Mm.
You know, the adrenaline response rather than a real availability for whatever the actual situation is.
Mm. Yes,
and an intention to like keep leading into practice.
In AA, you used to always say you have to have the willingness. You know, it's all about willingness. And you know, it's like okay, here I am, going to do the best that I can. You know, and that, yeah, that's really important as opposed to I can get that.
Yeah, I also associate it sometimes with the commitment to vow. It has some energy, willingness around that. And then also I wonder, this tension between, you know, way-seeking mind, which to me also has a willingness and an energy to it, versus having no thought of gain. So it's like, the thought of gain, you know, you could just sort of fall into sloth how do you cultivate that bodhicitta, the way-seeking mind? I think of the tensions between the two of those.
Mm-hmm.
And virya is somewhere along in there.
Mm-hmm.
Hey guys, if we could remember to kind of repeat what people are saying because we can't really hear what they're saying off the mic.
Thanks, Kyra. I had that reminder and then I didn't do it. So at this point, we would have quite a few to backtrack, but we will do that going forward.
Well, Don was talking about, we can say that, well, Kakumyo mentioned willingness, and Don also mentioned that from his experience with AA. And also, before reading the article, he was saying he associated energy with something more like cups of coffee that sort of just, you just wait for it to happen versus something that you can cultivate.
Yeah.
Is that a correct summary?
Yeah,
that really is the idea that this is something, you know, your willingness, your intention, your leaning into is something you can do rather than something you have to wait to happen to.
So he's saying it's something that you can do rather than something that you wait for it to happen to you.
Yeah.
Am I clear enough when I'm repeating that? Okay. Sorry, I can get booming. My voice can get really too loud too, so.
I don't need a mic. Great.
Sometimes I don't need a mic.
So a couple people have mentioned what virya is not. And I want to pull that out just a little bit more because I think that contrast is helpful. Don said it is something that can be cultivated rather than something you have to just wait to have happen.
Mm-hmm.
Kakumyo, what was your instance of not? It was like not...
Not adrenaline,
yeah. I think what Sokushi was kind of getting toward and something that I wanted to point out was how it's different than striving.
Mm.
Striving, and I think if we look at that kind of focus on that sort of wholesomeness or virtue that is part of each of these factors, I think that that's where striving gets kind of weeded out, because striving can usually, for me, link back to some, you know, sort of self-aggrandizing or egocentric kind of point of view. Whereas virya, in the context of seven factors, is not that. It's broader. It's tied to right action.
Yeah, the thing about striving or desiring to be a Buddha, from, you know, it's got the goal and it measures itself against, you know, your achievement of that predefined goal, as opposed to this being a willingness, an openness to say, okay, I'm going to be a part of this and learn from this and, you know, see what I learn, rather than say ahead of time how it's going to turn out.
Yeah.
You want to summarize that?
You're really good at it.
Me too. Now I'm like, I just forgot what it, I forgot my summary. I had a summary in my head. Striving is about having a goal, predetermined goal that you'll measure about. And Don is saying that energy sounds more like start and see what you learn and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Determination.
Mm-hmm. You think it's not, or it is?
It is.
It is? Yeah.
To keep going.
Yeah, that kind of perseverance. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, when you were first talking about this, it really resonated with me, sort of the feedback that you were talking about, feedback loop. It brought to mind that a retreat that I went to early on, late in the day, and just something strange happened, and it felt like a feedback loop of energy. However, it's kind of the opposite of what we've been talking about here, because it was something that happened, and it was closer to, I mean, not quite adrenaline, but it was definitely amped up, you know, and it was just this light and energy, and I don't know if that's the same kind of thing or if that's a different aspect of it.
Yeah.
But
I think that we can also experience Virya as, and teacher help me out here, but as these sort of like just really uncontrolled bursts of energy. All kinds of things can happen when we do meditation, and bursts of energy is one of them, you know.
Yeah.
I've experienced that as well.
Yeah. I'm not sure I would have said joy at the time.
Yeah.
Looking back, maybe it was.
Yeah.
But it was just a little shocking.
Yeah.
But anyway, that feedback loop where it kind of built on itself was interesting.
Yeah, that, and I think that's sort of being aware of how much energy is enough, how much effort is enough, and what is enough. I mean, sometimes it comes, you know, for quote unquote no reason, you don't really know why, and other times you've been consciously sort of watering it. And I think both are true.
Mm-hmm.
And you can sort of notice what's really, you know, which case it is, I think.
So let's move on and talk about joy, and I'm going to call on some of the Zoom folks if they don't speak up. So let's take a minute and call forth some joy. What does it feel like? What does it look like? What is joy to you? Sokyo, can I call on you? You have the advantage of me being able to see you very clearly, so. I think you're muted, Sokyo.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So, you know what, the topic for me, joy is kind of at the pyramid, but oftentimes I've been resistant to work towards happiness, and so for me it's been important to recognize contentment. So it doesn't have that emotional quality of of being egotistical or around gaining ideas, goals, just contentment, and it kind of slides into equanimity. So, well, the one thing, the only time when creating art that's very a state of joy is when the ego slips away and something appears sort of without, it's often a surprise. So it's not something you anticipate or that you expect or plan. It just takes care of itself somehow. So that's how I usually use the word contentment.
That's great, Sokyo. You hit the nail on the head in terms of one of the sort of ends of the continuum that we think about joy. On one end is this idea of contentment, exactly as you named. Thank you so much. Anyone else? Joy.
I had the same experience.
Unmute maybe.
Jenny's calling. There you go.
So I've started to make a distinction between what I call happiness, which is maybe kind of dependent on external life circumstances going in a way, and then I feel happy about that. And what I've been calling joy, which seems to just sort of arise from within, independent of what's going on around me. So I find it in being really present in the moment where I'm just there and I feel like something inside rushing up or bubbling up, and it feels like an unconditional kind of joy. I feel it sometimes in meditation, like that. I don't know if there's a distinction between bliss and joy.
Yeah.
But I'll feel something that feels like blissful or joyful in a space of meditation. And so I guess joy as something that's unconditional, not dependent on life circumstances.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. Is that Jen? Okay, great. And that's actually the other, you know, when I looked at different, what different authors had to say about joy, that's exactly the other sort of end of the spectrum that I saw. On one end of the spectrum was this just contentment, you know, kind of this sense of like moderation, like just contentment with everyday pleasures, even to the degree of like renunciation. And then on the other end of the spectrum is this experience of just rapture and bliss, and this can just arise, you know, out of the blue. So you two were in perfect order there for bringing out the two ends of the spectrum. Thank you. How do other people experience joy?
Don, you were going to say something before Jen spoke?
Yeah, I recently read a book about happiness and talked about this is it's an inside job, you know, it's your orientation to the world, and this said that about you don't want happiness to be dependent on things happening or turning out the way you want or whatever, but rather to happiness to be content in and happy in the life you're leading and the life you have. So that coming to be grateful, which is a key part of being able to be happy, is to be grateful for what you have and recognize that. And that's the thing you can work at, you know. So again, it's something like, okay, hey, I can work on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been since coming here, you know, and that's a steady thing. And so it's... And then every once in a while, if you get the background okay, then every once in a while you have that that bubble up thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just, oh, yeah. Yeah. For no reason. So.
Do you want to restate for Don?
Oh, it's funny. I wasn't listening for that at all. I was.
I got you.
I should go ahead.
So Don was saying that he's experienced that since coming to practice at Dharmarine, that like kind of this gratitude and sort of contentment for small things that really is tied in with gratitude. Mm-hmm. And that can ultimately lead to sort of this welling up of bliss.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. I experienced that as well.
And being happy for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like not dependent.
Yes. Yeah. Not dependent.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I was so just like letting myself like feel like what he was saying that I wasn't summarizing in my mind.
That's why we had each other.
I apologize.
So let's spend a few minutes on what it is not.
I heard a teaching that joy and happiness are different, and that joy is when you see an oasis, and happiness is when you drink the water.
Mm.
So it's not happiness.
Yutan said that she's heard of saying that the difference between joy and happiness, that happiness is when you see an oasis and that joy is when you drink the water. Other way around! Other way around, folks. Honey, do you have your hand up?
I did. I think you can hear me, right?
Yeah, you can, yeah.
I know when I've experienced when I feel in samadhi and that I'm just one, I just feel just part of this earth and just part of life, you know, and it's just feel right. This being sitting just felt right.
Hmm. That's beautiful. Thanks, honey. So,
I used to think happiness was going to a Mexican restaurant, having a lot to eat and a lot to drink.
Right, yeah.
And I just last week went to one that didn't have anything to drink and had a small amount to eat in. And, you know, it was like, you know, but true happiness has got to be, you know, you have that without a Mexican restaurant, Andy. So,
folks on Zoom, Don's talking about not eating so much at the Mexican restaurant and finding contentment.
Yeah.
Yeah, so exactly. So, what it's not is this sort of like pleasure based on sensation necessarily, which can lead to sort of grasping for more of that, right? Like, we want more pleasure. Whereas contentment is satisfaction.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's, you know, eat the chocolate brownie with intention, without clinging or grasping at wanting, you know, a tenth one or something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's the, like, if you're going to do it wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out, you know, how 5 bites is as good as 50. But, you know, it should be, but you know, I'm still working on
it. So I think that, go ahead.
Joy feels like very physical, and there's a lot of sensations for me with it. Like, I was having a lot of joy today in the sunshine, and like, it was, you know, warm and pleasant, and like my body felt good.
Mm-hmm.
And like I have joy when there's not sunshine too, but yeah, it does feel sensual, but without clinging.
Mm-hmm. That's a great distinction. Yeah. So Reiju's saying that she does feel pleasure from sensation, and noticing that if there's a way to do that without grasping. Is that right? Thank you.
To me, speaking of how they're related, so joy and tranquility, for me personally, go often together, and it's a real body sensation of joy with tranquility often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like very, very much a physical sensation.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious about that aspect of sort of physical sensation. I think that's an interesting one to think about.
It's very light for me. Yeah. It's a lightness. You know, I mean the other day I got into like an AT&T hell loop and then a hell loop between OHSU and Legacy, and I was at the grocery store and I just wanted this one thing and I couldn't find it, and I'm like, I can't live in America anymore. it was like that, and it was hot, you know, the opposite of Honey was saying, everything is how it should be. Everything is okay.
Yeah.
It's like, to me, that's the opposite.
Yeah.
I said, what it's not like, it's that hot, you know, it's the opposite of that. It's cool, it's light, it's tranquil.
And like the joy for me in like touching the new flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's really a lot of joy in that sensation.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I'm curious about how that pulls apart for people, like, or if it does.
That's a good segue. What time is it? It's 8:20.
Want to keep moving along? I have one more little exercise for people and one more little thing.
We'll go. It's do we go to 9 or 5 minutes to 9? No, okay, we have time.
We have time. Okay.
Because the activity will take about 30 minutes.
Okay. So, okay. We've got about 10 more minutes to play.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I wanted to just briefly do a discussion about why, you know, for those of you who read the homework, and even if you didn't, why do you think joy and energy, priti and virya, are necessary for awakening? Why do you think that these are included? This is kind of a tough one. It's like heavy. How can I rephrase that?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
How did they make it onto the list of 7? Like, why wasn't it just 5?
Yeah.
Yeah. How did they make the cut?
Yeah. Thanks, Secretary.
Well, for me, I had that question when you first read down the list. I thought, well, those are great, but, you know, it's good to have energy. Good to be happy, but I don't see how that's enlightenment. But when talking about the willingness to engage, you know, that's absolutely essential to enlightenment. And seeking happiness and joy in what is rather than what you want to be is also, you know, key to enlightenment. You're never going to be enlightened if you're always complaining about what isn't, you know, how things are supposed to be changed and all that. So,
yeah.
You know, they're essential habits of the mind to get there.
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. So Don's saying they're essential habits of mind and that you're never going to have an experience of awakening if you're just complaining about everything and more or less. Yeah.
I'm thinking about what I was saying about the sunshine and the baby flowers and how it's just so like present, immediate.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Thanks, Vision. The presence and immediacy of a moment like touching a flower or taking in the sunshine. Yeah.
I like what the reading said, it said like a stolen indifference. I thought that was a nice way.
A what difference?
A stolen indifference. Yeah, I don't know. I just like that phrase.
Mm-hmm. That they were saying someone who has sort of stolen indifference.
Like that without. I think it was the one about joy in specific, but. I feel like it can go for both, kind of, like, just, like, this, like, this willfulness and this, like, this pushing back.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the soul part probably goes to the joy, but with those things. makes everything a lot more difficult.
So Amity is describing a passage in the reading where they're talking about someone who's sullen and indifferent. And she's saying that how those kind of relate back to energy and joy is sort of the opposite of sullen indifference, kind of, ish. Great.
I think of in terms of, oh, go ahead, Kathleen.
Well, just, you know, another reason why they might be on the list is that they're both really helpful in preventing backsliding or kind of stalling out in practice. You know, they're kind of longevity enhancers for one's practice.
Nice. Yeah. Kakumi said they're longevity enhancers as we travel on this journey.
I was going to say they I think they also have with them an aspect of virtuous, wholesome, ethical behavior.
Yeah.
They promote the ethical, right action side of the practice.
Yeah.
You know, and they remind me of the precepts in that sense.
And that is the perfect segue to my last little bit that I want to cover before we do our activity, and that's kind of this medicinal quality that we talked about in the first class. The seven factors of enlightenment are described as having being able to be a strong antidote to some negative mind states. And I think joy and energy in particular have sort of this strength, this this quality of being an antidote to sort of negative, typically described as sort of sluggish mind states. And so just briefly, I want to give people an introduction if you haven't heard of them, the five hindrances, which are often discussed in relation to the seven factors, because they have sort of a, the seven factors are described as being an antidote to a lot of these negative mind states. So the five hindrances are these mind states that impede practice, and they can lead to unwholesome action. And they include sensual desire. No, I'm kidding. Anger, sloth or torpor, restlessness or worry, and doubt. So again, these five hindrances are sensual desire, anger, sloth and torpor, restlessness or worry, and doubt. And so you'll see the seven factors described as being a way to sort of starve out these five hindrances. So there is this way in which you can kind of work with them as you're seeing some of these qualities come up. So, for example, the more active factors of enlightenment, like energy and joy that we're talking about tonight, can offset sluggishness, lethargy. I would argue even, you know, like anger, or even in some cases, you know, this aspect of joy that we're talking about, that's more contentment, can kind of ward off that really sort of pleasure-seeking sensual desire. In a way that's unwholesome. You know, I think we can kind of feel out for ourselves how the difference there that Reiji was getting at. And then the more calming factors of enlightenment, which we're going to get to in the last classes, those include tranquility and equanimity. Those can help raise energy and offset like restless mind states, so anxiety, things like that. So there's this sort of medicinal quality, and sort of you can use them as an antidote to some of these other mind states. So I just wanted to kind of briefly bring that up so people have that in their toolkit. Again, those are the five hindrances. I think that's all I wanted to say in terms of just like throwing out some information for people to think about. And now we're going to do an activity.
Okay. So we are going to do a practice called Insight Dialogue. I'll describe a little bit of it. Kakumi knows about it. Minshu knows about it. Zonia knows about it. Anybody else heard about it? Okay. I'm going to describe it a little bit. But I think in this room, let's get in pairs first, and then I'll describe it. And then the Zoomers will get in pairs after I describe it. So, So, Minshu, are you coming? Will you come in here?
Sure.
Okay. So, please... get in pairs. You might want to choose someone you weren't with in a previous week. So position yourselves in pairs for dialogue, and then I'll describe it. Minshew. So, and Kyra, do you have the instructions in the document? The chat monitor document?
I do, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. So I'm never quite sure whether if I shared correctly and you can have access. Okay, so I want to just briefly describe some of the principles, and then we'll do the activity. And so some of the principles of insight dialogue is that we're bringing the silence and mindfulness of meditation to our experiences with people, to our interactions with people. That same mindfulness and silence to that. So it's, you know, it values pausing and starting in silence, that relaxation can bring acceptance and ease and curiosity. There's an openness and receptivity to it, trying to open your mind, having a spacious mind. One of the principles is also to trust whatever emerges. You know, let go and embrace each other's impermanence, each other's experience. Another principle is to listen deeply, to speak the truth of your experience. Looking for resonance in the body, letting things soak in. So listening deeply before speaking, listening deeply while speaking, after. It's this calm, slowing everything down, listening, trusting, letting whatever emerges. And joining together in that present experience with the person you're dialoguing with, sharing observations, sharing joys, sharing insights. So those are the principles. And I'll describe, Sokyo's done this before. In Dao Ren, we did this, yeah. Sorry, I'm trying to look around the room seeing who we've done this with. So I'll describe how it goes generally, and then the Zoomers will break out, and then in the room here, I'll be ringing bells to keep you moving through. Yeah. Okay, so so let's start in silence for a couple of minutes, and then I'll ring a bell, and then we'll begin. Okay, tonight the question to explore is, how do you experience joy in your life? So sit with that for a minute or two, and then I'll give you the next instruction. So how do you experience joy in your life? Okay, so when you're ready, in your pair, take turns, 3 or 4 minutes each, answering that question. So now, Kyra will put those folks in pairs on Zoom. So take turns, 3 or 4 minutes. How do you experience joy in your life? So, so they're going to go off. And in the room here, I'll ring a bell after about 3 or 4 minutes for you to switch if you haven't already.
So could you?
Yeah.
So, for instance, Amity is my partner. I'll say, Amity, how do you experience joy? And then for 3 or 4 minutes, Amity tells me, and then it's my turn?
Yeah. Let's end with about a minute of silence. Let's come back to silence and just sit quietly for about a minute. I'll ring a bell.
Do you want me to?
Oh no, they'll don't worry about them. They'll come back. Yeah. So let's just sit in silence for a minute or so. Maybe now would be good, because I think we're frozen. Maybe we could bring them back. So that's the end of the class for tonight. We have a handout with some homework on it. Homework,
again, air quotes. It's at the top. Kyra can share the document with those folks. We've also included some of the quotes that from some of the quotes from Zonia's presentation, and a cartoon at the bottom. So, next week, concentration?
Next week we're doing two together. We're doing concentration and tranquility.
Folks online, you'll have access to this as well. Thank you all very much.